Blog Talk Radio.
You wanna be an American idiot. You wanna nation of jargon in the media. And can you hear the sound of hysteria? The subliminal mind fuck America.
Victory, God.
Ha, 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 ha.
And strike and strike and strike and strike.
Ha, 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 ha.
And strike until you have victory for every enemy that is aligned against you.
Ha, 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 ha.
And now with the developing story,
strike, latest
happening in the nation's capital involving Bakersfield Congressman and House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, it all centers around this Washington Post article that says McCarthy told fellow Republicans he believes Trump may be getting payments from Russia. This article coming out just this afternoon, the Post reporting a month before Donald Trump clinched the Republican nomination, McCarthy made a politically explosive accusation that Trump and a California congressman received payments from Russian President Vladimir Putin. That recording, made in June of 2016, around the same time media reports emerged of Russian hacking into the Democratic National Convention headquarters. Now, according to the report, House Speaker Paul Ryan then interjected in that conversation, stopping it and swearing the Republicans listening into it on secrecy. McCarthy's spokesperson, Matt Sparks, saying, quote, today, the idea that McCarthy would assert that this is absurd and false, and called it a failed attempt at humor. McCarthy has been a long reported ally of Trump, with the president on several occasions referring to McCarthy as, quote, my Kevin. And this all comes as House Republican leaders have so far resisted calls for the appointment of an independent commission or special prosecutor to investigate Russian interference in our recent election. But just moments ago, former FBI Director Robert Mueller has been assigned to oversee the FBI's investigation into those allegations.
decision by Rod Rosenstein to actually identify a special counsel and name Robert Mueller is remarkable.
And this all comes as James Comey, of course, fired this week, last week as FBI director, releasing a memo saying President Trump asked him to end the investigation into Mr. Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, and just today calls from a Senate panel to have him testify. Now, Congressman Kevin McCarthy released a statement to 23 ABC about that Comey memo today, saying the reporting and allegations leave more questions than answers. The American people in Congress need facts. My House colleagues and I will continue to perform our oversight duties as a co-equal branch of government. Now, McCarthy just tweeting out moments ago, we can see here regarding that Washington Post article, quote, and it was resonating the same sentiment from his spokesperson, that this was a failed attempt at humor gone wrong. No surprise, Washington Post tried to contort this into a breaking news story. Now, I reached out to McCarthy's spokesperson since that tweet, asking him if he's worried the president will be upset at McCarthy over this story. He told me no, quote, it was a bad joke. Jackie, back to you.
Right.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show. We thank you for joining us. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi, good evening, everyone. And this is Lori Pickup from Michigan. I hope everyone is doing well, and we hope to have a good show lined up this evening.
Yes, it's Monday, August 21st, 2023, Season 5, Episode 26, When and Why Did America Become This Stupid? America's always claimed to be the number one country in the world. Number one in what exactly, though? Education, healthcare, social well-being of its people, democracy, equality, overall happiness, culture, economic growth, and prosperity. Tonight, we will focus on American exceptionalism. What is an American exceptionalism, really? Is the American dream a fallacy and a delusion of grandeur? When was America really great? Would there ever be a time in America when we can honestly say we're truly great? We have had many wars since the formation of the Republic in 1776. Only 16 years of that history have we ever been at peace and have stability with no war. Thus, starting unnecessary wars in the name of freedom and protecting democracy make us great, or just being world bullies. We are number one in private prisons. We are number one in everything military. We are number one in cultural appropriations of other countries and natural resources. We're number one in whitewashing real history. We're number one in promoting white nationalism. We're number one in using the mainstream media as a weapon for propaganda to suit our social and economic interests and goals around the world. Are we really that great? Will we ever be great? What makes any nation great? Thanks for joining us tonight. Call in and have your say on this sensitive subject. Our number is 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. Turn off all background noises as it is distracting to the host and listeners. Be respectful by not speaking over the host nor other callers who may be on air at the same time as you. Visit our website, kitchenpolitics123.com. This is Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. We're not anti-stupid. We're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Let's get cooking. Now, Lori, you heard that clip there. You know, back in 2016, when it was Republican nominee Trump, the former reality show star, clinched the Republican nomination, and then Speaker from Wisconsin, Paul Ryan, kept them to secrecy, you know, about, you know, Trump being on the payroll of Vladimir Putin, the Russian president. Somehow the Washington Post got hold of it. And Kevin McCarthy made a tasteless joke about Trump being a hero of Vladimir Putin. Now, I mean, all this may come back to haunt Donald Trump because, as we all know, the FBI investigated. It was a shoddy investigation because, as we all know by now, Trump and his administration has politicized the FBI. He tried to politicize the Department of Justice. You know, what's your take on that clip that I played at the beginning?
I'm sure that that clip is probably true. I am sure that he may have, you know, been on Putin's payroll. But there's probably no reason that he wasn't. And I do believe the DNC was compromised as well. It is just now starting to really surface. Paul Ryan was involved in it as well, if you remember. Paul Ryan, I believe, mm-hmm. was the speaker. And he tried mm-hmm. to undermine the Washington Post as well. So, yeah. Yeah, that story is sort of a bombshell because I really never heard the Washington Post story come out like that until today or a couple of days ago. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And the other clip that I played after the D-Lay intro music is Religious Fanatics, mm-hmm. when they reacted, the preachers, evangelicals, reacted to Donald Trump's mm-hmm. defeat in 2020. You know, mm-hmm. they're part of the problem, not part of the solution. And this is why we have a stupid country with stupid people, for the most part, mm-hmm. not just like the Deep South and not only in the Bible Belt and, you know, Utah mm-hmm. and wherever else, but, you know.
A lot of it is, you know, some people are probably illiterate, and you're probably right about mm-hmm. that. Other people mm-hmm. are racist, and there's others that are followers. And we all know about a person that's a follower. They can't be a leader. They have to be a follower. And he knows how to chime in into his followers. But mm-hmm. let's remember that every single time he got indicted, now we are number four, he is called out for people, for, you know, his supporters to come out and, you know, protest, so to speak. And so far, mm-hmm. the groups that have come out are very small, maybe 100 people, 50 people. I mean, we've seen that, you know, all, you know, in D.C. We've seen that in New York. So I think that we are all tired of the name Trump. I think that mm-hmm. we are getting to a point where our heads are ready to explode, and we want the story to come to a final blow, and I would love to see him in prison. That's where I want him. And I know exactly. the process takes a long time, and I think we are making progress, but I still want him out of the airwaves completely. Mm-hmm. You know, and so mm-hmm. we can talk a little bit today about his bail that he had to post in Georgia. Mm-hmm. which ended up being $200,000, which I'll be honest, mm-hmm. I thought that it was going to be more than that. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
But I mm-hmm. guess it doesn't matter at this point. She is going to go forward, and, you know, he had to pay the bail, and mm-hmm. he's going to, I believe from what I heard, he's going to turn himself in on Thursday. You know, he'd be, I can't wait to see the mugshot if they really go through with it and their fingerprints mm-hmm. and, you know, everything. That'll be mm-hmm. something very humiliating to him, I'm sure. But you know what?
Yes.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yes. And, you know, former President Trump says that he will surrender to authorities this coming Thursday in Georgia mm-hmm. to face charges in a case accusing him of illegally scheming to overturn the 2020 election results in the state of Georgia. And Trump wrote on his Truth social network Monday night, hours after his bond was set at $200,000, "Can you believe it? I'll be going to Atlanta, Georgia on Thursday to be arrested." It will be Trump's fourth arrest since April of this year, when he became mm-hmm. the first former president of the United States in the history of the United States to face indictments. Since then, Donald Trump, who remains a leading candidate for the Republican presidential nomination in 2024, has had what seems like an endless procession of bookings and arraignments and jurisdictions across the country. So his appearance in New York, Florida, and Washington, D.C. have drawn enormous media attention, with news helicopters tracking his every move. So not only these four indictments, but possibly Nevada and Arizona lining up to indict him and my New Mexico, where I live, the Attorney General is currently doing an investigation to see if he tampered with our three electoral college votes, puts, fake electors there to vote for him. So Trump's announcement came hours after his attorneys met with prosecutors in Atlanta to discuss the details of his release on bond. And the former president is barred from intimidating co-defendants, witnesses, or victims in the case, including on social media, where he can't post, according to the bond agreement signed by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis. So Trump's defense attorneys and the judge, made it absolutely clear that he shouldn't be on social media kowtowing and bullying people and intimidating people. And it explicitly includes posts on social media, reports of posts made by other people who may support Donald Trump. So he's in a world of hurt. He's in a world of trouble. And for the past week or so now, it's been good not to hear from Donald Trump, you know, because he's so, you know, timid like a church mouse. So his final will is drop that on him and 18 other co-defendants. You think it's going to complicate a little bit. But knowing Donald Trump being Donald Trump, he's going to, like, go off the rails and, you know, disregard what the judge and the prosecutor said. And with that, hopefully he'll be in jail awaiting trial. That would be so good.
Yeah, we'll see how long it takes him to, you know, to undermine the prosecutor there. We'll see how long it takes, because he, you know, she told she did tell him explicitly she does not want him posting on social media, and you know that includes his Truth Social, and he loves to rant on there, as we all know. So this is going to be, and it'll be very interesting to see if he can do it. But you know, he was okay, I think, when the D.C. When that lawyer, I'm sorry, that judge told him, you know, gave him his restrictions, but he really did not follow her orders to the, you know, very well. So we'll see what happens on next Monday, coming up Monday. Well, she will decide, you know, what she's going to do about that, and they will set a date for that trial as well. Now, let's talk a minute about the bonds. The order sets Trump's bonds for the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations, or RICO, charged at $80,000, and adds $10,000 for each of the other 12 counts he is facing. Bond and the amount defendants must pay as a form of collateral to ensure they will show up in court appearances. So he had to pay $80,000 for the RICO charge and then $10,000 each for the other 12 charges. So that's how it all added up for him. And, you play, you got to pay. That's all I've got to say about that.
Exactly.
You know, basically, I just want to say one last thing. He has basically made our lives not miserable, but on a daily basis, where you have to see somebody that you despise every day when you turn on the television, because you just want to see the news around the country. And he has dominated our airwaves for years now, and enough is enough. We've had it. We have had it.
Yeah, sorry about that. I pressed something accidentally. Yeah, I get what you're saying, totally. And, you know, poor Eric, who was co-hosting last night with me, and poor Elaine, they couldn't even say his name. That's how distraught and really annoyed they are, like everybody, most people I know, with Donald Trump. Like, I can't stand to hear his voice, much less. You know, so we have, like, four callers lined up and everything. So we'll get these people shortly. And, hello, callers. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123. What's cooking tonight?
Well, I guess I'm the only one around, so this is Elaine from Michigan. Continue on.
Okay.
You two sound great tonight. Continue.
Hey, you know what? We also got Eric Brantley from Michigan here. How's everybody doing?
Oh, hi,
yes,
Eric.
How welcome.
Are you?
Good.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, welcome, Eric.
Surprise, surprise. Good to be back again.
Yeah. Nice to hear
yes,
from
man.
You.
Yes, man. It was great last night.
Great, great.
Yes, man.
Hey, listen, I'm glad for the segment that we did last night, and thanks for the props to that.
Oh, yeah, no problem at all.
Elaine was trying to say something. Go ahead.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
Yes,
let's talk a minute about... Go ahead, David. That's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to play like a segment about the evangelicals losing their minds when, Joe Biden won the election. I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. Sad, but hilarious. Ken Copeland, who, asks his followers to give him money for a private jet. You know, this was him who was laughing. That, ha, ha, ha. It's so creepy. I wish people could see it.
And strike until you have victory for every enemy that is aligned against you. Strike and strike and strike and strike and strike. I hear a sound of abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. I ask, oh God, that you would take your iron rod, and I ask that you would smash the clay jar of deceit in America. And Lord, if it be your will and if it be necessary, another election, another voting day, whatever it takes under your kingdom, oh God. Smash the delusion, Father, of Joe Biden as our president. He is not. The Lord says it is done. The Lord says it is done. Bring it all in line. Bring it all in line with the will of God.
Why are you attacking the prophets, the intercessors, the Christians, the positive voices, no matter who they are, even on the media, that are wanting to see Donald Trump reelected? Why are you attacking them?
Could our faith be strong enough to pray for these two individuals that are at the helm of what appears to us to be a great pattern of deceit?
You ought to be attacking the lying media. You ought to be attacking the liars that are wanting to strip our freedoms from this nation.
Certainly of ideology that is anti-Christ, anti-biblical to its core.
And if you think he's speaking in favor of the one that CNN celebrates, if you think he's speaking in alignment with the wicked of this world, if that's where you think God's voice is, then you don't know it.
Let me tell you something. Every Christian, every pastor out there that voted for Joe Biden last night, you have brought a curse upon yourself and your family, your children and your children's children down to the third and fourth generation, and you need to repent.
We release and commission and dispatch the angels into that place in Pennsylvania and in Michigan. And in all these states that have yet to be called, Father, that they would not purposely be delayed for the purpose of fraud.
We humble ourselves tonight, Lord God. We ask you in Jesus' name, Father, that you'd forgive us as a people.
They're coming here. They're coming here. In the name of Jesus from South America.
Mighty God, please.
From Africa, from South America, angelic forces, angelic reinforcements.
God, you are pro-life. Be pro-life, Jesus.
Pika hata anda ata. I hear a sound of abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. And strike and strike and strike and strike.
Yes, so that was the evangelicals losing their mind on Joe Biden won the election games. So my question is, isn't the church supposed to be non-partisan to tax those sons of bitches? But anyway, go ahead, Lori. You're going to make a point all the way to the next.
Absolutely right. You know, if they're going to talk about politics and who they want as president and et cetera, then they need to pay their fair share of taxes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Just like any of, well, let's not say corporation, because they're really not paying right now as well. But I'm just saying, Everyone needs to pay their taxes. I don't care. And the church should not be exempt. When they start talking about politics, that's it. Done.
And, you know, after watching them playing that clip, that's why the separation between state and church is an absolutely true thing that should be separate. You know, it's the foundation of our democracy, separation of church and state. You know? You know, I mean, these people.
It has nothing.
And I call them such Christians and so hateful. You know? Who would celebrate Mexican coming across the border in Texas and getting caught up by that, you know, thing that Governor Abbott put in their ear around? You know, that's not Christian, right? Jesus wouldn't try and murder people.
No. And hurt them and maim them, you know, and not treat them like human beings. Is that Christian-like? No, it is not. So it has no business in our politics. It has no business. Stay in your church or pay your taxes. That's it. One of the two. And keep your mouth shut because I don't want to hear. I really don't. That's all a
seriously
bunch of
disgusting people.
They are. They're very sick.
Yes, ma'am. So did you hear about Roger Stone, who was caught confessing that Trump lost? And so he was basically doing a mapping out, you know, the next course of action where Trump would try to steal the election. And, you know, Roger Stone, as we all know, he was one of the main speech writers for Richard Nixon. He and Nixon were close. And he lied during the Watergate burglar hearings. And he went to prison for it. Now, this man, Roger Stone, he's such a lunatic and a sociopath. And he was such a follower of Nixon that he has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back. I mean, how creepy is that?
Yeah, it's very creepy.
And, and MSNBC Monday revealed more details he captured for his film on far-right activist and political operative Roger Stone. In the news video, Roger Stone, a longtime GOP operative and Donald Trump ally, confessed that Trump lost the 2020 elections, and he was well aware of the fact that before it began, efforts began to overthrow the elections, the election results. They have it on tape of him saying that, you know? So it begs the question, who is the unnamed person in the indictment? Is it Roger Stone? Because, you know, the affidavit did say that it was a political consultant. You know, and Roger Stone does that. So, you know, I really don't understand Roger Stone. I mean, confessing something. And he's so arrogant to really film himself making this confession, saying that, oh, okay, this is what we're doing next. And if that don't work, then we just, like, call martial law and put the troops out there to beat and maim Americans because they didn't get the election results that they wanted. I mean, that's so disgraceful. You know, Roger Stone should be in prison, awaiting trial, just like Donald Trump should be, and 18 co-defendants of Donald Trump. They mean nothing well for America. They're not patriotic. And how dare they try to overturn our democracy? Who the hell do you think they are? It's sickening. It's frightening.
Yep. I know. It's very, it is. And, you know, like we've been trying to say, we're tired of, you know, we have to wrap this all up because it is a stain on our country. And we really can't move forward as a country until all of this, all these corrupt people and, you know, are come to justice. They have to come. And if not, our justice system, you know, will be in disarray. It'll just be in shambles. It really will. So we do need justice, and we do need these people to pay the pauper, you know, for what they've done to us.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I hope in the long run, in the short run, I should say, that, you know, Roger Stone will see federal charges. I mean, the whole focus is on Donald Trump. I hear some background noise. Can you stop that? Yes, so despite the current DOJ focus on Donald Trump and his trial and 18 others, hopefully Roger Stone will see federal charges for his role in January 6th and trying to usurp the results of the 2020 election and the victory to Joe Biden. His fake elector scheme was unveiled and everything. And he should go to a trial and go to jail for that. You know, that's deplorable.
Oh, yeah, he's a piece of crap. There's nothing else to say about Roger Stone, you know, with his, hair.
Yeah, somebody have something thing in the background. Can you mute it or turn it off, please?
Yeah, I'm not sure where it's coming. I don't know where it's coming from. It's not me.
It's not me either.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's a staticky thing through the phones or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I have a queued up this clip of Roger Stone. He was trying to incite violence before the 2020 election. And he wanted to blame Democrats, and he wanted to blame Antifa, which do exist. Antifa is not a group. So the General 6th Committee, this video of Roger Stone encouraging violence for the 2020 elections. And here is the clip.
Recently, the Select Committee got footage of Mr. Stone before and after the election from Danish filmmaker Christopher Gulbrandsen, pursuant to a subpoena. Right before the election, here's Roger Stone talking about what President Trump would do after the election.
Let's just hope we're celebrating. I suspect it'll be, I really do suspect it'll still be up in the air. When that happens, the key thing to do is to claim victory. Possession is 9/10 of the law. No, we won. Sorry, over. You're wrong.
ABC.
I should right to the body. That's what I'm doing.
I'm sure smashing pumpkins if you know what I'm saying.
The Select Committee called Mr. Stone as a witness, but he invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Do you believe the violence on January 6th is justified?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer your question on the basis of the Fifth Amendment.
And Mr. Stone, did you have any role in planning for the violence on January 6th?
Once again, I will assert my Fifth Amendment right to decline to answer your question.
Although we don't yet have all the relevant records of Roger Stone's communications, even Stone's own social media posts acknowledge that he spoke with Donald Trump on December 27th as preparations for January 6th were underway. In this post, you can see how Roger Stone talked about his conversations with President Trump. He wrote, "I also told the president exactly how he can appoint a special counsel with full subpoena power to ensure those who are attempting to steal the 2020 election through voter fraud are charged and convicted, and to ensure Donald Trump continues as our president."
So there you have it. January 6th Committee, that was Zoe Lofgren, the congresswoman from California. And, that coward Roger Stone, pleaded the Fifth, and all the questions that were asked of him. So again, Republicans trying to, kill democracy. To have them on tape, boasting about stealing elections, pushing violence and beating people up. What more do you want?
Exactly. It's just, it's so unbelievable that these people have the guts to say that they didn't, they were not involved and, but when it comes their time, now they're all speaking. They're all talking now. And they have to know that they're going to get charged. And when you plead the Fifth, what is that really saying? I'm guilty.
Admission of guilt.
What else can that mean? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
if you have nothing mm-hmm. to hide, you don't plead the fifth. That's for sure.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You know, it's just so unbelievable that we have to
mm-hmm.
that we have to be at this point. You know, where we have a president that is working so hard, you know, move this country forward in so many different ways, and he
mm-hmm.
is not getting any credit. I say this all the time, and it upsets
mm-hmm.
me because, like today, he was in Maui today, you know, shaking hands,
mm-hmm.
and oh, he was, you know, he appointed someone to overlook, you know, the whole situation there, and you know, the destruction and the sorrow that's there. And, you know, also there are people that are going to be like vultures that want to buy the land there, and they don't want that to happen. So, you know, he
mm-hmm.
is trying to take care of things on a daily basis. And we have these criminals that are trying to destroy our democracy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Enough.
Mm-hmm.
We have to come to a
enough.
Point where
exactly. And speaking of vultures, capitalist vultures, do you know Oprah Winfrey has bought over 700 acres of the burnt Maui land from people? Penny on a dollar. Yeah. So she's one of the rich people.
Yeah, I think that was before.
She's one of the rich.
I think that was before this happened, but she does own a lot of land in Hawaii. Yes, she does.
Mm-hmm,
she does.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so, you know, against the vultures.
And that's what
vultures capitalists, you know, who don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what
nice.
They're trying to avoid with money
mm-hmm.
to go there and buy upland and build hotels on the ocean,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, you know.
Right.
And, you know, become a graveyard. That's not how it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So new numbers came in as of August 13th to August 17th with a plus or minus ratio of 4.9%. It was done, a poll done by NBC News, Des Moines Register, the 2024 Iowa Republican Presidential Caucus. Among likely caucus goers, Donald Trump has a 42% lead. His closest rival, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, 19%. Then we'll have Tim Scott, the U.S. Senator from South Carolina, with 9%. Nikki Haley, 6%. Mike Pence, 6%. Chris Christie, 5%. Vivek Ramaswamy, 4%. Doug Burgum, he's the current governor of North Dakota, 2%. And Will Hurd, former congressman from Texas, 1%. No, that's going to be a real shit show because Trump did say that he won't participate in next week's Republican debate. And,
nope.
You know, is he being a coward? I mean, you know, why is he afraid to go up against Chris Christie, who is, like, throwing kitchen sink at him?
In my opinion, what he stated
mm-hmm.
was basically that he did not have to, you know, go
mm-hmm.
to these debates because he's already been president, and they know what
mm-hmm.
a great president was. So why should he have to go to the state? That's like work for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I think it's hysterical.
Yeah, I mean, every president who is trying to run for re-election has gone to the debate. You know, Reagan did it
yeah.
in 1984. Bill Clinton did it
sure.
in 1996.
Yeah.
And then in, you know, 1992 and then 1996. I mean, that's the part of the tradition. So, again, Donald
mm-hmm.
Trump thinks he's bigger than everybody and knows everything. And, you know, going against the precedents, against the grid. I mean, how dare he? Who the hell does he think he is? Seriously. I mean, somebody mm-hmm. really, really needs to humble that son of a bitch. For real.
Yep.
I'm sick of this man.
Yeah,
Eric and Elaine, what do you think about, you know, the Republican field?
I'll let Eric go first.
All right. So here's the thing. You know, it's funny how people tell me that when you look at the governor's race in Arizona from last year, I mean, you had Democrat Katie Hobbs versus
mm-hmm.
Republican
mm-hmm.
Carrie Lake. Now, apparently
mm-hmm.
Katie Hobbs had refused to debate Carrie Lake And I don't know why exactly she never clarified that, but some people had regarded that as being, you know, weak or whatnot, but I still supported her and I still support her, and she's still a strong governor, strong candidate. I don't know how much that affected her in the polls, but I don't hear the same people saying that Trump is weak because he refuses to debate Chris Christie and the other Republicans. Ron DeSantis refuses to debate Gavin Newsom. And so it tells me two things. One, I really want to say it's because they're weak and they're cowardly, but on top of that, it also goes into the reason why they're weak and cowardly. The reason why is because they know that right now, and for the most part, as it's usually been, that Democratic policies are generally stronger, more popular, they're more effective, more liked, more supported, they rate higher in the polls. And, you know, I mean, when you look at Gavin Newsom, I mean, this guy gave stimulus checks on top of the federal money to his own state, provided proper protection equipment for kids in schools, provided meals to the seniors, gave the increase in wages to fast food and restaurant workers, all that good stuff. That's why his approval rating has skyrocketed up to 64%. And DeSantis is doing none of those things and not even a fraction of it. That's why he's sinking. And so I think the similar thing is going on with the Republican presidential debates. And the fact of the matter is none of those Republicans have any type of policies or any agenda that's going to go better for helping the people. And they know that none of them have actually made a solid, legitimate argument for why they think Biden is destroying the country. And as I had talked about yesterday, and this was covered on Mehdi Hasan's show on MSNBC, that a lot of people are just misinformed. They're not seeing the real success. That's why a lot of people appear to not be feeling it, or so they claim. If the Republicans, whether it be DeSantis or Trump or Chris Christie or whoever, the fact of the matter is if they are willing, if they really claim that this administration is ineffective and incompetent, why don't they just do what Obama said to do and just explain your thoughts, explain your ideas, tell me how you're better. Trump will not do that, and Trump will not do that, and most of the Republicans, MAGA or non-MAGA, will not do that. That's why they refuse to debate.
Well, for sure. You're absolutely right.
I mean, what do you think, Elaine?
Right.
Well, I don't think they've got anything to brag about because they haven't done anything.
No.
So they're looking at their bag of tricks and they're pulling ideas out and on each piece of paper it's blank.
Yeah. I mean, we have that Swami, his name is Swami. I can't even pronounce his first name because I've really hardly paid attention to him. But he wants to raise the voting age to 25. You know, he's also stated that, you know, cuts have to be done to Social Security and Medicare. Chris Christie says the same thing. Pence basically said the same thing. So what offering the American people? Cuts? And to give more tax breaks to the rich? Is that what they're giving the American people? I don't think so. I don't think so. That is not something that the American people will vote for. So that's why we have to keep on, you know, expressing or trying to explain the things that President Biden has done. And I think also a little bit of it is that Americans are spoiled. We are spoiled people. And, you know, we were all humbled with COVID. And then, you know, President Biden brought us out of it with the stimulus checks, et cetera. And now things are going better for people and people are working and et cetera, you know, all of that. And we're just back to being the way we were before COVID. Spoiled. Spoiled Americans. That's my opinion. And
you know what?
We need
and you know
to
what?
Understand why. You know, why
you know
things
what?
Are good right
now. Right. And you know what? To bounce off of that, I'll say this, that with the Biden-Harris administration helping us kind of climb our way out of the COVID hole, it's like when you just look at the American Rescue Plan alone, that combined with the COVID relief package and the infrastructure package, yes, you're right. A lot of those things went into helping the American people. A lot of people are not understanding the detail of how and why that happened. Because number one, according to the fiscal report for the American Rescue Plan Act,
That that bill overall allocated $350 billion about to go into the states. Each state got a minimum of $500 million, and out of those $500 million in each state, that went towards things like helping to expand unemployment benefits. It went towards going towards things like the economic injury disaster loans. I think that's what it's called. It went towards helping with the expand the paycheck protection program. Also went towards things like helping protect Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. All of these things which every Republican in our government had voted against. That's why most of them refuse to debate the Democrats. That's why they have nothing to run on. And they don't know how to explain that to the American people. And more Americans, I hope, are waking up and seeing that. These are the very things that have helped boost the economy. And this is what helped prevent a real recession from going on. Now, yes, people can still argue that, you know, you have some grocery prices on certain things that might still be a little higher than they want. But for the most part, a lot of this stuff has gone down and down. Gas prices are a lot lower compared to what they were a year ago, 2 years ago. Gas was $5, $6 about a year and a half ago. Now most gas prices on average are $3 to $3.50. The lowest gas price I saw was a gas station on Ford Road in Dearborn Heights. It was down to $2.68. And so for people to sit here and say that these gas prices are as high as they've ever been, no, they're as low as they've ever been in a long time. And so policies are what's benefiting the American people. No Republican refuses to acknowledge it. No Republican refuses to look into it and say, okay, maybe this is okay. They won't do it. They won't do it because their base and their the big money that feeds them allows them to stay on this right-wing narrative, and they want to be hacks and pretend like everything is all gone bad. And that's why they're having trouble with a lot of the Democrats. And so that's what Democrats need to capitalize on and emphasize on. And that's why I say if somebody could make it happen, I would gladly go on MSNBC and CNN and explain that. And I'm even willing to do it for free.
I know. Me too. I agree with you. It's, you know, absolutely. The one thing that stands out in my mind in Michigan is that in the midst of COVID, when, you know, the restaurants and everything were all closed and people were not working, and everyone was, you know, a lot of people were collecting unemployment benefits, and they were making good money, you know, with their unemployment benefits. I had a sister that was collecting unemployment, and she was making more money on her unemployment than when she was working. So, but they have forgotten that already. They have already forgotten, you know, what, you know, the Democrats did for us when our country was in deep trouble. You know, COVID was a big problem. You know, a lot of people died. A lot of people were sick. And, you know, things built, you know, businesses had to close. And everyone, you know, we all gathered, our governors and the president, you know, made plans. And we were okay. I mean, it turned out well. But everyone has short-term memory. You have to think back at what happened, you know, what happened. We were told to drink bleach by Trump. Do you remember that?
Yeah. He was also, with nails caused cancer.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
Put lights under your skin.
Yeah. I mean, I cringe. I used to cringe when they would have those, you know, when they would come up and, you know, and start, you know, when Trump is in office and they would come up and, you know, try to tell us about COVID and, you know, and he, oh yeah, the bleach. I was like mortified. I'm like, I can't believe what I'm hearing. I still to this day cannot believe that man, those words, that was the president of the United States basically telling people to drink poison. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a minute. It's insane.
Well, they pushed
the narrative that
the government was controlling us and keeping us in the house. And that was an absolute lie. We had to hunker down in order for this virus to die itself out.
Yeah.
I mean,
I mean, no one liked it. No one liked it. I mean, it was a change of life for everyone. But, you know, and maybe it taught us a little lesson at that time. Now we're back to being what we were before COVID. you know, spoiled America.
Spoiled.
That's my opinion.
Yep, yep. I know Republicans and corporations that have this myth about, you know, U.S. companies. U.S. companies spent a record $1 trillion to buy back their own stocks last year. And, you know, when the idea or the myth is when taxes are cut, these corporations will invest more in hiring new people, raising wages, what have you. And since 1980, since Reagan came in, that's not the case. You know, they're calling wealth tax unconstitutional. They're saying that, the rich pay more than their fair share already, so why pay more?
Mm-hmm.
Some corporations pay 28% of taxes, you know, but more has to be paid. That's how we keep afloat and help the economy moving and everything. You know, the rich are going to pay capital gains tax. If the Republicans get a hold of the U.S. Senate and retake the House, that's one of the first things they'll do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, get rid of the capital gains tax.
Right.
And state tax, they want to get rid of that.
Yeah.
You know, if you inherit somebody's estate, like your parents die, inherit their estate, you know, the thing is, you pay like X amount of taxes. Republicans want to take that out completely. So, you know, I mean, that's such nonsense. The tax evasion's whole offshore banking, that needs to be clamped down and that needs to be stopped. You know, if regular Joe Brown, John Connor, have paid taxes, why shouldn't rich people and corporations pay taxes as well? You know, it's unfair and and that's why they're fighting against IRS getting $80 billion recently in Joe Biden's plan. You know, it was supposed to be more money, but as Eric and I discussed last night, because of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, the watered it down drastically. So it's just $80 billion IRS getting to investigate tax fraud and tax cheats and people who don't pay the taxes who are in the 1% and everything. You know, Republicans running scared. They want to abolish the IRS. You know, saying it's illegal. You know, what's illegal about collecting taxes and fixing bridges and roads and hospitals and building new schools? Republicans are ridiculous. But I digress.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, you know what? That just made me think of something else. Because here's another thing too. We talk about all this stuff about how Democrats vote, how Republicans vote. You know, it's like this. This is the problem, and I feel, even though I haven't been involved in politics that long, I feel like I'm the only one who has really talked about this or even probably think this, but the problem with legislation is, regardless of which party it's coming from, the problem with legislation is that there's too much complexity into each piece of legislation. So, for example, no matter how good or bad it is, there's too many things that are conflicting in it or too many things that a lot of people aren't paying attention to. When you look at the original infrastructure package that Bernie Sanders laid out that had to get watered down by Manchin and Sinema and the likes of them, this thing had amazing provisions in it that if this actually went through, Democrats would have voted for it. The president, Democratic president, would have passed it. This would have boosted the Democratic approval ratings by at least 10 to 15%. You know, we're talking about universal pre-K. We're talking universal child care. We're talking about things like more people getting access to health care and affordability, free community college. I think there might have been something in there about eliminating the deductibles, copays, and premiums, even if not going to the Medicare for All extent. A lot of those things were in there. The problem is, if I was the one in charge of the entire government, I would take each of those things and I would separate them out, make them their own bill. Some of them could be done through executive order. Others would have to be voted through the Congress. So instead of that, I would just stand in front of the entire government and look them all in the eye and say, we're going to lay down universal child care right here. Let's see who all votes for it and who all votes against it so that we know who we're dealing with here. This one right here, especially at a time like this, I dare you to vote against this and show the American people who you are. That right there is really going to force their hand, and that right there is really going to let us know who we should and shouldn't be voting for. And if more politicians were aware of that and more of the voters push the press politicians on that and really press them, I think that's another step towards progress.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I like that idea.
But, yeah, I do too.
Yeah. That would be the way to do it. The problem with those bills, any bills, even even at the local level, is there's too much garbage put into it. And
then you got a
big fight because somebody is going to sit there and want the garbage.
Mhm. Yeah, they have a little, something that they want. I'll sign on to the bill if you do this for me. That's what they do. Yep. And, and that's it really, that's why we end up with so much, it being that, the bills are 1,000 pages or something like that, because everyone has had their little pieces of pie, and it's ridiculous. They should be, like Eric said, just a clean cut bill, up and down vote, show who's for, show who's against. That's democracy. That's democracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple.
Put each of the bills, and see, here's the thing, and this is why a lot of Democrats and Republicans in the government haven't gone through the entire bills for a lot of this stuff. I mean, we saw when they criticized people like Cory Booker because he didn't go through the entire Obamacare bill. Actually, some Democrats and Republicans didn't, but then they were also going through the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act bill from 2017. They didn't go through that. And see, the problem is when you talk about stuff like either that, I would use a better example. I would say stimulus checks. There's no way that a stimulus check bill should be 1,000 pages long. I don't care who writes it. And you see, the problem is nobody is going to take time to go through all that. The average American person doesn't even feel like going through 20 pages or 15 pages.
No.
When it comes to a bill of a stimulus check, that really, in my opinion, shouldn't be any more than 3 or 4, I would say 5 pages at most. If I was the one writing the bill, and I would write a bill that says everybody who makes under, say, $100,000 a year or even $200,000 a year gets a stimulus check of, say, $3,000. Then in that bill it's going to say under $200,000 a year, $3,000. $200,000 maybe over, you get probably $1,000, maybe $2,000. Anybody who's a millionaire or billionaire, you don't really need it because you guys are already filthy rich, so this doesn't affect you one way or the other. And then that's the end of the bill right there. You lay it on the floor if it can't go to the executive order, and then see who votes against it, and then you let the people know, hey, this is what you wanted. They didn't want you to have it. Ted Cruz didn't want you to have it. Mitch McConnell didn't want you to have it. Rick Scott, Lindsey Graham, Mitt Romney, all those people, they didn't want you to have it, and so this is why you should stop voting for these people, because they do not want success for you.
Yeah, and the other thing is, Eric, those people that you mentioned are the same people that would go back to their states and say, hey, look at what I did for you, when you know that they didn't do that for you. You know, but that's what they tell their constituents, that that's what they did for them, you know, so they can get voted in the next time. It's crazy. Yes, simple is always better. Simple is always better.
Yeah, and because it's about this. It's not a bash per se towards either party. It's simple in many ways. Number one, instead of putting all these big fancy political words that the majority of the Americans don't even know what they're saying, sometimes I don't even know what they're saying when they put certain words into a bill. All you need to do is make it easy and simple enough to where every American can understand it. You have to start putting layman's terms into it, because it's better that something is said easier and simple and for it to be better understood. And the other thing I want to mention too, and I forgot to bring this up last night, we have to remember this. And I don't know who all here was aware of this. And I'll actually show you the video later on. It's probably about 6 or 7 minutes, but you only need to see the first 3. One of the podcasters that I used to watch, Jimmy Dore, this video took place from this was from October of 2020, so this was a month before the election. And Trump actually had the opportunity to sign what was essentially the American Rescue Plan Act. And he actually said that he was going to wait until after the election to sign it, because he's basically saying, well, they have to vote for me first and then I'll sign it. Well, guess what? The fact that he didn't sign it, he lost support and he lost votes because of that. He lost the election, and then when Biden got elected, that was one of the first few executive orders he signed, which is why Trump's numbers had sinked while Biden's numbers increased. And so Biden had the right to go out there and say, the last guy could have signed this. I actually did it. And no Republican could logically argue against that. They know that they failed on that. And I thought that was just the funniest thing.
All right.
Our number to call is 515-605-9802. Say your first name, where you're calling from. Turn off all background noises, as it's distracting to us, of course, and to other listeners. And be respectful and not speaking over the host or the callers who may be online with you. So we'll call from Orlando, Florida. Hello, Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the show.
My name's Nathan in Orlando. I just turned on, scanning through, looking for something. Whenever I cut it on, I think I heard somebody say that they would want universal health care for everybody. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. I think there's certain ways that we should get to it, but yeah, I kind of believe along those lines. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, you do know that when Ted Cruz did his 23-hour 19-minute filibuster, they voted. He was against it. Okay. The next morning they voted 100% for it. The guy that's running in South Carolina for president now, Tim Scott, he wrote a letter to Obama explaining why, asking him to, you know, hold off on it because of from his view, the damage it will do to the economy and to our healthcare system. And he wrote this letter, and all of the Republicans signed it, but they all voted for it a month later after they voted for it, 100%. I can send it to you in the chat room.
Are you talking about which bill are you talking about? You're not talking about the Affordable Care Act from 2010.
Yeah, the Affordable Care Act of 2010 had 39 Republicans opposing it. The Republicans ran on, we need an appeal. They only had 39 opposing it. And they said in 2012 that they needed a majority in the Senate to be able to stop Obamacare. The Republicans said that. And then whenever he did his 21-hour, 19-minute filibuster, they voted the next morning, and it was 100-0.
I don't remember Tim Scott being in the government at the time that took place, but I'm looking it up now because I could be wrong. But go ahead.
Okay, I can send you the government record. All I got to do is sign into your chat room if you got one. No, you don't have one.
Let me look up the bill number. You can send it to my
email address or Facebook or Messenger. I'll give you my info if you want me to.
Okay, yeah, we have it, Timmy. Mm-hmm. Let me talk slow now.
So my name is Eric Brantley. My email address is B as in boy, RANTLEYERIK at Gmail.
Okay, Brantley.
Yes, Brantley. That's BRANTLEYERIK at Gmail. So it's Brantley Eric at Gmail.
Okay. I'm going to link it, gmail.com.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to link it right now. As soon as I hang up, I'll still be listening. If you get it and you want to pull it out and look at it, I'll send everything that I mentioned to you there. Because I got it. All I got to do is go to a folder and get it. But thank you anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
I'm sitting at my computer now, so whenever it comes through, I'll receive it. No rush.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. That was Nathan in Orlando, Florida calling, first-time caller. Okay, the next thing on the agenda tonight is something that Melania Trump is furious at for Donald Trump. He used their son, Barron, as a political pawn, and she's seething. And rumor has it that she's considering divorcing Donald Trump over using Barron Trump as a political pawn on one of his social media posts, breaching a promise he made to her regarding not using her child in any of his political games. And it was an aim to disparage Joe Biden And this is what Trump said in the post. Quote, in an effort to level the playing field, Barron Trump will debate Joe Biden, end quote. You know, so, I mean, Donald Trump is a child. He's a petulant child. And he's not mature. He is not emotionally ready or fit to be president. He should have never been president in the first place. You know, so
nope.
Their son in social media posts came amid Trump's ongoing legal troubles, left the former first lady deeply shaken, according to the reports, by a raw story. And the decision by Trump to trot out Barron, a personal betrayal she can't forgive, the sources say. So Melania has been incredibly protective of Barron, and rightly so, he's a kid, and has told Donald that she would not stand with him, exploiting by anyone, even his father. So he made a promise to protect their son, and he broke it. Typical Donald Trump, you know, when he makes a promise, he's full of shit and he break it. There's a good chance that she won't forgive him, and next time we will see them together, it may be in divorce court. So do you think, in all, you know, seriousness, do you think for any reason Melania will divorce Donald Trump? Because, you know, as far as I see, the money is going good. So why should she divorce Donald Trump? Because obviously she's a gold digger.
I think this might be, as they say, the straw that broke the camel's back. Because it is very true that she has kept him out of the eye of the public. She has, you know, the school in New York, private school. She's tried to have, you know, him have a normal life, try to have as much of a normal private life as possible. And I think she has shielded him as a mother. And I don't take any of that away from her, no matter how I feel about her. That part of it, I agree. And if he promised her, which he probably did, he broke his promise. That could be the straw that breaks, you know, ends her, she can end up in, she can end up divorcing him because of that. She's protecting her son. And I don't blame her because he, I could see him doing that. I mean, I saw what he did. You know, my son can, my son Barron can debate Trump. I mean, I'm sorry, can debate President Biden? Really?
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, Donald Trump has humiliated her in so many different things, you know, like having sex with Stormy Daniels. She didn't divorce him
of
then.
Of course.
You know.
She just had a baby.
Yeah, she just had a baby. She was pregnant at the time with Barron, you know, and Trump, you know, had relations with Stormy Daniels. And other women, you know, some of them paid off not to come forward, but Susan McDougal, the former Playboy model, E. Jean Carroll case where she cried out rape and assault against Donald Trump, which she won $5 million right and so forth. Right? So through all that, you know, Melania still stuck with Donald Trump, even though he humiliated her big time, you know. So I don't know. We'll see how it plays and everything. It's interesting, you know, because, like you said, it could be the straw that breaks the camel's back, but, you know, I can't say in the near future, you know, Melania divorcing Donald Trump for any reason.
Yeah. I don't
know.
He's spending a lot of money on lawyers lately.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Maybe I've got a little bit of a mean streak, but I remember that coat that she wore that said that she didn't give a damn.
I'm glad
she's a good mother. I'm glad she's protecting her son. That's something that she should do. Maybe, and that seems to be the only family value that I see in her also, because of fact she was messing with Donald when he was still married.
As far as her getting a divorce
from Donald, you know what? I really don't care. I enjoyed her jacket now. She didn't care. Well, neither do I.
Like I said, the only thing that I can give her is that she was protecting her son. And that, you know, he's, what, 17 years old, I believe. And, you know, that's the only thing that I can give her props to. The rest of her, I don't care what happens to her. I really don't. You know?
I don't either.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, just how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Ron, so as was charged on and march on towards 2024 elections, Republican lawmakers are scared of political violence, and they're being drawn mm-hmm. out by the current GOP leaders, says ex-DOJ official. Many Republicans are aware that the rhetoric of their party is increasingly driving political violence, but their concerns and objectives and objections are being ignored and drawn out by leadership. According to Mary McCord, she's a former acting assistant attorney general for national security in the Trump administration. This comes as former President Trump increased targets, prosecutors, and judges involved in his criminal cases and personal language, and threats mounted against them, including a Texas woman who threatened to kill Judge Tanya Chutkan and Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. She was arrested yesterday or day before yesterday because she made statements mm-hmm. about, you know, wanting to shoot them. So, mm-hmm. quote, according to Nicole Wallace, NBC Anger, I think the fingerprints of it all are all over everyone who has said and did nothing. I go back to 9/11 and all the time, if you say something, see something, is what was asked of citizens. Now you know when Donald Trump accuses former FBI Director Andrew McCabe of treason, Republicans didn't say anything. They didn't say no, he didn't. They said and did nothing. So, you know, is that Republicans stoking the fuel of violence? Mm-hmm. Is that the wanted to happen? You know, and things mm-hmm. like when Judge Chutkan get threatened and Congresswoman Sheila Jackson from Texas get threatened. You know, even a man was shot by the FBI because he made a threat against Joe Biden. I think that was in mm-hmm. Texas. I'm not sure. Minnesota, one of those states. I mean, mm-hmm. Donald Trump should be taken off his computer, put in jail until his trial date comes around. Because
yep.
he is fueling the flames of violence. Thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think he is. But I also think that people are not going to risk their freedom, so to speak. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they're seeing what happened to the January 6th, to this, you know, the ones that attacked the Capitol there. And mm-hmm. they're seeing what happened. And a lot of them are mm-hmm. going to prison, and not for 1 year, mm-hmm. 2 years. Some are going for 6, 8, 10 years. And
16 years, the most. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think that maybe, you know, they're saying, I'm not going to prison for him. Are you kidding me? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if they're smart, mm-hmm. but I don't know. We shall see.
Mm-hmm. My guess would be the same.
But you do have some people that are unhinged, and he does blow the dog whistle. He's no different
yep.
than Charles Manson. Charles Manson never personally killed anybody. He had everybody
nope.
do it for him. And
yep.
There's a good example of something that happened today. There was a woman hurt in California. Her business was called, I think, My Pie. And
mm-hmm.
She displayed a rainbow
yeah.
flag, which is for LGBTQ people.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a derogatory, some man came in and made a derogatory remark to her. And she probably was a strong woman and stood up to him and told him that was, you know, her flag and she could display it. And he shot and killed her. And
yes.
the sheriff did get him, and they shot and killed him. But there are still people out there that Donald Trump's dog whistles are getting to them.
Yeah.
And he,
mm-hmm.
one of these judges has got to in the jail. Either that
yeah.
or put a muzzle on him. I think
duct
I would
tape.
Rather see a muzzle on him.
Me too, duct tape.
I really do. I think I would like to see a regular big leather muzzle on him.
Yep.
Let him walk around with that muzzle. Boy, that would be better than, because we know he's going to have an orange jumpsuit. So, but I'd like to see the orange muzzle in the meantime. Mm-hmm. My opinion.
Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I know that California store owner who was fearful of shot and displeased over the pride flag. You know, she was a pro-LGBTQ fan who didn't discriminate against anybody, whether immigrants, whether they're LGBTQ, whether whomever. You know, she just respected and loved everybody. And for some asshole nut job, a Trumper, who it turns out that he is a Trumper, you know, came to, and shoot her in her own goddamn place. I mean, it's getting out of hand here, man. And I have that little clip here of, you know, the story behind her getting shot. I know Elaine explained it, but, you know, here's another explanation. This is from Good Morning America, ABC News, George Stephanopoulos.
The California store owner shot and killed him. What police say was a dispute over a pride flag outside her business. Kana Willis has the story. Good morning, Kana.
George, good morning. Now, authorities haven't said yet if they're investigating this as a hate crime, but leaders in the area say she was a fierce advocate for the LGBTQ plus community. The governor calling her murder absolutely horrific. This morning, a small California community devastated after a local woman was shot and killed over what authorities believe was a dispute over a pride flag.
Gunshot victim, medic ambulance 91, medic injured 92, stays out of area for law enforcement.
66-year-old Laura Ann Carleton shot and killed Friday outside the clothing store she owns near Lake Arrowhead. Law enforcement says the suspect made several disparaging remarks about a rainbow flag that stood outside the store. The armed suspect, who has not been identified, then fled on foot. When authorities confronted him a few miles away, he was armed with a handgun. A lethal force encounter occurred, and the suspect was pronounced dead at the scene. Carleton, known as Lori by her friends, was an advocate of the LGBTQ community. Friends say this was not the only time her flag had been targeted, writing on social media that in the past, when someone took down her flag or vandalized it, she put up another one.
New folks moving into town, new couples, new LGBTQ family, they were concerned about moving up here. And we hear stories about them driving by her store and seeing the flags and feeling so welcome. They immediately felt the acceptance and were no longer afraid to be up here. And Lori did that for them.
Carleton leaves behind her husband and blended family with 9 children, the memorial now growing outside her store.
And when people realize that you don't have to be gay to be killed because there's a rainbow flag. This was a straight white woman with children.
Now, this is still under investigation, but the Anti-Defamation League says that nationwide they have seen an increase in harassment, vandalism, and rhetoric, all towards the LGBTQ plus community. Guys.
Mother of 9, just so heartbreaking. Kana, thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, that, there you have it. Because of the dog whistle, because of the lack of gun control in America, because of Donald Trump and the fascist Republican Party, Laura Ann Carleton, who's 66 years old, 9 children, her nickname was Lori, have her own business going on, and welcoming people, whether they're LGBTQ or whatever. And it takes a sick, hateful person to let a flag that isn't even on his own property to affect his own emotional stability. What does that say about America? We need free healthcare because it is like him, you know, need free healthcare to get over whatever he has behind and what mental instability is, you know? I mean, I don't know what to make of this case. It breaks my heart for her and her family.
I blame also a lot of this on the overzealous religious right. They've got to stop. They are hateful, absolutely hateful. It's a sin to use religion the way they're using it.
It is.
It's a sin. It's wrong. Nobody is coming after their religion. I look down the street. I've got a street by me. I look down the street. I have a Catholic church. I have a Lutheran church. I also have a mosque. And down the street from that is a Baptist church. And as I keep going on towards downtown, there's numerous other churches. Nobody is going after anybody's religion except the religious zealous. And I've had it with that.
Yeah,
enough is enough. They can take their hate and put it up where the sun don't shine, and I hope they get constipated.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Eric, you have anything to say about the shooting of this woman?
Well, you know what? Considering what we saw in, I'm trying to remember where that was at in New York with the was it Buffalo, New York, with the white supremacist
upstate
white guys
in Buffalo.
Shot black people.
Yeah.
So considering the fact that we saw that, considering a lot of the Asian hate crime that we've been seeing, and a lot of the, we still have members of the government who embrace and support, whether it's actively or passively, this whole white nationalism, you know, neo-Nazism, white supremacy, you know, ideology. This sadly does not surprise me that much. And yeah, it's to what Elaine said. I mean, it's these people just have a hatred that comes out of nowhere. And I think that the more of the, I'm not, now that particular action, it's arguable on whether or not the MAGAs and the government are either directly or indirectly responsible for it. I do know this. The more of those we vote out of the government, the less comfortable that these people will feel. And that's exactly what I want, is they can't go around and spewing, you know, all this anti-black, anti-gay, anti-woke garbage that they spew. This is why it's so essential that the Democrats have to take advantage of this moment now, take advantage of the fact that Republicans are this divisive, this bigoted, this misogynistic, this racist, this xenophobic, this transphobic, whatever you want to call it. It's just all this out here. And we're still going to have to create policies to help, you know, lessen that and lessen it more and more so until it's not there.
Yeah. Madeline, what's your thought on this? Madeline, you still there?
I guess not. Okay, so moving on. Laurie, so what next should we talk about here? Well, like just under 40 minutes left, and we'll have a lot on the agenda.
Let's talk a minute why people fall for fake news. Do you have it there, David? It's there. Scroll down a little.
What's the topic?
Why we fall for fake news. High-tech thinking or lazy. There is fresh research. I looked this up today because I find it very interesting that after, you know, this man has been indicted 4 times now, and there are they are claiming that he's got more support than ever. I find that so hard to believe. So I thought, I have to look this up because it just kind of blows my mind. So there is fresh research offered a new insight on why we believe the unbelievable. So it says, it goes on to say, have you heard Nancy Pelosi diverted Social Security money to fund the impeachment inquiry? President Trump's father was a member of the KKK. Far-fetched as those statements sound, there were among the most shared fake news stories in Facebook in 2019, according to a report by a nonprofit organization called Avaz, which concluded that the political fake news garnered more than 150 million views in 2019, and a study by Dartmouth University computer science scientist, Sarosh Vaskogi, I'm sorry if I said it wrong, PhD, and the colleagues found that the fake news actually reaches more people and spreads more quickly than truth. I believe that. People love controversy. They love secretive things. They love tidbits. And if it's negative, they latch onto it. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but people latch onto it
100%.
More quickly.
Yeah.
Because, for example,
Laura,
really
Fox News pulled things out of their asses just for sensationalism, yellow-bellied journalism, and controversy equal big money, even though Fox News from time and time again been debunked as, you know, garbage, you know, they're still getting the higher ratings and, you know, the advertisers advertise with them for millions of dollars, you know? So, I mean, like I said in the introduction here, you know, the mainstream media is a weapon for propaganda to suit our social and economic interests and goals around the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like we're number one in news for bullshit, basically. You know?
Yeah.
And it's not when Fox News do it. The right-wing media do it. And I can speak for, you know, like Young Turks and whomever else that do the due diligence, investigate, get sources from different places when they're reporting on something. But the right-wing media in this country is more for entertainment and more for fake news to sensationalize things. So when you sensationalize, you get more hits, and then more hits equal more advertisement and more money. And that's why the fairness doctrine, Elaine keeps saying it almost every show she come on. We need to bring back the fairness doctrine, because Fox News tried to go over to Canada, and Canada said, no, you're entertainment. You're full of shit. You're not maybe, you know, on any of our news stations or our airways in Canada, because you lie, you know? So, I mean, Fox News is just a joke. The right-wing media in this country is a joke. And bring back the fairness doctrine. That's the only way we can stop fake news from happening.
Big
thing.
Yes.
Amen.
And these researchers went on to say that a frequent explanation is motivated reasoning. The idea that people's cognitive processes are biased towards believing things that conform with their worldview. Hence, a liberal voter is predisposed to believe unsavory, while a conservative is more willing to accept Rep. Pelosi would illegally divert public funds. But research by Rand and colleagues challenges the idea that it's our reasoning that is biased. The dominant explanation for why people believe fake news has been that their reasoning is held captive by partisan biases. Their thinking gets hijacked, he said. His studies paint an alternate picture. People who believe false things are the people that just don't think carefully. And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always easier to, and it's juicy too, isn't it? You know, when you hear this stuff, it's like juicy and like, oh, wow, who did that? And, you know, I got to read that. How did they, you know? But to hear about, you know, President Biden, you know, going to Hawaii, well, that's boring, you know, basically for most people, you know, because that's his job, so to speak, you know. So, yeah, I mean, this kind of makes sense to me.
And, you know, it has to be intellectual laziness as well, because there are so many sources out there, whether right-wing, left-wing, center, with no political alignment. C-SPAN is the best one, for example, where you can go to their station and they break down things for you from top to bottom so eloquently, you know, so you can make your own decision from what they report, you know. You can't accuse C-SPAN of being biased either as a Democrat or Republican, you know, but, you know, one has to be, you know, like so intellectually lazy. Not to try to find different sources of information, not just your regular Fox News or MSNBC or whether you're left or you're right, you know? It's just laziness on their part, you know? We'll have to stop being lazy.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to believe, you know, things that are sensationalized, you know? It's easy to believe those. And if you, you know, you don't want to research it, you're not going to. You're just going to believe it, you know, because they said it, so it's probably true. And we have to learn not to be. We just really do. Because everyone has their reason for lying and not telling the truth or exaggerating. They have their reason. And we try to, you know, explain that every single week, you know, how they're lying and cheating us and not telling us the truth about things. So, you know, this article is right on. And it goes on to say people who believe false headlines tend to be the people who don't think carefully, regardless of whether those headlines aligned with their ideology. So it comes down to, you know, they don't give it any sort of critical thinking. You know, they don't think, well, I don't know, maybe I should look this up and see, you know, is this really true? No, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, they just think it is, you know, that's, you know, it's in print, so it's got to be true.
Right, right. The sort of myth of American exceptionalism and the idea of the United States as uniquely virtuous may comfort many Americans, but I don't think that's true, really. American exceptionalism is a myth, and, you know, over the last two centuries, prominent Americans have described the United States as an empire of liberty, a shining city on a hill, the last best hope of earth. We'll have the free leader of the free world, indispensable nation, blah, blah, blah. And so these enduring tropes explain why all presidential candidates will be compelled to offer ritualistic, you know, things to say about America and America's greatness, and why President Obama landed in hot water when he, you know, was debating Mitt Romney for saying that while he believes in American exceptionalism, it was no different from British exceptionalism, Greek exceptionalism, and any other country branded of patriotic chest thumping. So what's your thoughts, each of you, starting with Lori? What do you take away from the statement of America being exceptional?
Well, in a lot of ways, we are exceptional. In a lot of ways, we've, you know, we have failed because, you know, like I said before, I think that many of us are spoiled Americans. We take our clean water, our air, you know, we take our roads, we take our cars, we take our homes, we take everything for granted. And, you know, we see over and over what can happen to people when disasters in times of, you know, in storms and all the things that have been happening. But if it doesn't happen to you personally, you do feel bad. But, you know, your life goes on. So, yeah, I think we're just, a lot of us are spoiled Americans. I'm sorry. That's just how I feel. And I think that we need to be a little more, have a little more heart for people, you know, a little more kindness, you know, have gratitude and all those things that, you know, can make a country great. You know, that's just my opinion. That's how I feel.
Eric, what do you think about American exceptionalism? A myth or?
Well, you know what? I say this. So there's a pro and a con to it. The pro is, okay, so we're exceptional in the sense that, you know, everybody and all the other countries recognize that we're the greatest country on the globe, the greatest country in the world. Because all the land of opportunity, you know, start a business, make money, all that type of stuff. You know, the con is it seems like a lot of the Republicans and maybe even some Democrats are, so they want to embrace that, but we don't use it to the degree that we should be using. We use it to an extreme degree in one sense, but not another. We're going to use it in the sense like, hey, you know, if another country wants to attack us, we got a military built up that we're ready at any time. But on the downside, it's like there's other parts that we could make more exceptional or that we could make better in order to further emphasize the exceptionalism. First of all, we're the best country in the globe. That means that we should have the best healthcare system. That means that we should have the best education system. That means that we should be having higher wages. If Republicans and they want to talk about exceptionalism and they want us to brag about that, well, guess what? There are ways that we could continue to improve ourselves. It doesn't just stop right here. There's always room for improvement. You want to continue to improve yourself, there's always room for improvement. You keep going. That's exceptional, in my opinion, right there.
We've been the land of freedom and opportunity, but somewhere along the way, we've lost our way. I really feel we've lost our way. And if we don't straighten our own act out, we're not going to be exceptional. And we've got people coming to this country because they have horrible, horrible, horrible treatment in their country. But we have a lot of improvement to do, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're falling short on a lot of things that we used to do. We aren't safe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely not safe anymore. I mean, when somebody passes me that's angry and then slams on their brakes and I have to swerve to the right side of the road, I'm afraid they're going to pull a gun. Now, I shouldn't have to live that way, and neither should anybody else in this country.
And that's very true, Elaine. You know, there's a lot of aggression out there, and it runs through everyone's mind, you know. And I agree with you.
The poor lady with the flag. She should not have been killed today or Friday. Friday.
Yeah,
she has the right to hang that flag. If he didn't like looking at it, walk on.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not exceptional anymore. I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm being realistic about it, but I want to do something about it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Because how can we say America nurtures liberty, but yet still, as a progressive or a liberal, when you try to pick up for people who are downtrodden and less affluent, you know, you get screamed like, oh, you're woke, you know, da-da-da-da. You know, we're not nurturing liberty and freedom of speech. And we don't respect human rights, that lady who, you know, got shot and killed in her own store because of the gay flag. We don't embrace rule of law anymore because we have so many school shootings and different shootings. You know, we're not a virtuous nation. And for the love of me, for the love of God, we're not a peace-loving nation. Why? Because since 1776 until now, it's only 16 years in U.S. history since independence have we had no war and a relative time of peace. That says a lot about United States of America, you know?
No, it does.
And we're going to other people's country and take their resources under the banner of protecting freedom and liberty and guarding against democracy, you know? So if that were the case, why you don't go to South Sudan and try to stop that civil war? Why? Because South Sudan
how can we be exceptional when we're taking books off a shelf? I'm surprised that Dayton hasn't had a big bonfire with the books.
Exactly.
I mean, how can we be exceptional? I'm looking at all of these horrible things that are going on. That's not exceptional. I mean, crying out loud, well, where does that book hurt anybody?
It doesn't. If you don't want to read it, don't read it.
Right.
You know, we have to go back to this. They talk about freedom. They want their freedom back. Well, they're taking away freedom. Because if they take away a book that you want to read and tell you you can't read it, is that taking away your freedom? Of course it is. If that woman, the woman that was killed on Friday, she had a pride flag out there. That was her business. It was hanging on her building where she worked and owned. But yet someone else came away and took away her life and her freedom for having that flag.
All right, now we're going to go. Now I get another issue, pro-life. Little children in preschool. We have preschool program in Michigan. They are taught that when there is a drill, that they are quiet and no cry. They take the chairs, they take the tables, and they push them up against the door. They have these drills. If there is a bathroom, the children go in the bathroom, and they all stand on the toilets. This is exceptional. This is bullshit. This is bullshit. We're talking about four-year-olds going to school have to learn gun drills.
Oh, I know. You know, and like I said, doesn't that take away their freedom of going to school and being happy and learning?
They have to go through metal detectors.
So,
You know, what kind of freedom they are, what the, you know, these patriots, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
are talking about,
mm-hmm.
they want their freedom back. No. Do they
mm-hmm.
realize that their
mm-hmm.
freedom is being taken away on a daily basis? I mean, really?
Mm-hmm.
Have they really thought it through? No, they have not.
Mm-hmm.
They've been just told.
And another myth.
By,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, another myth
told.
Is that God is on our side. You know, they want public prayer in schools. And they want Christianity to be the national religion. And the United States was founded on, you know, like people are fleeing from Europe, especially to England, for religious persecution. So how can you want the United States to have a national religion where,
mm-hmm.
you know, send me your hunger, send me your poor. You know, it's not based on religion that the United States was formed in. The United States was formed in war, and God was not in the picture when they wrote the Constitution of the United States. So that's a myth right there, and that's not American exceptionalism. Another myth is the United States is responsible for most of the good in the world. No, arguably, especially during the Cold War, the United States is responsible for starting wars because certain African nations, and in the Caribbean, and Latin America, and Central America, you're either... you know, against the United States or with the former Soviet Union, or you took them in between road, the middle of the road, you know? And so with this whole thing about America being, you know, making the most good in the world, that's nonsense because when people didn't fall in line, you know, and okay, we took the third path of not being with the USSR or with America. We try to find our own way. You know, America screwed them over. Jamaica is a prime example of that. 1970s, Chile, Allende, you know, Allende in Chile, he got screwed over by the United States, you know, because he was like a democratic socialist. You know, so when, you know, people say the United States is responsible for the most of the good in the world, that's nonsense. The Cold War is a testament to that. And next thing, myth three, is that America's success is due to its special genius. What genius? You know? You know, I don't even know where to start with that one there, you know. The United States has enjoyed remarkable success, yes, and Americans tend to portray their rise to the world power as a direct result of the political foresight of the forefathers, the founding fathers, that the virtues of the United States Constitution, the priorities placed on individual liberty, the creativity, and the hard work of the American people. In this narrative, the United States enjoys an exceptional global position today because it is, yeah, exceptional, but there's more than a grain of truth to this version of the American history. It's not an accident that the immigrants came to America in droves in search of economic opportunity, and America became the melting pot, and, you know, the myth facilitated the assimilation of each wave of new Americans, whether you're Italian American, whether you're a Caribbean or Jewish American, whoever. You know, America's scientific and technological achievements are fully deserving of praise and owe something to the openness and the vitality of the American political order. If it weren't for immigrants like Albert Einstein, Oppenheimer, you know, name them, you know, wouldn't have, you know, this greatness in science and technology. But what we're happening now is that we're not doing well in those subjects like mathematics and reading and writing. You know, we have to get back to the basics like that. And that is what we make America great. You know, we lost our way and we're not exceptional in terms of education. You know, so, and a next myth is, United States behaves better than other nations do, you know, and no, that's not the case, because we use the CIA to go over in people's countries and mess with them and destabilize the country. We did it in Venezuela. That's the last thing, the last country north that will cause trouble, because they didn't want to give us their oil. And, you know, who are we to go to another nation and try to take over the resources? Tell me. You know, so we're not well-behaved people. We're naughty. We try to go over people's country and take away the resources and the culture and put our culture, United States culture, in it. You know, so that's wrong. That's wrong. But I digress.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go on and around it more. Mm-hmm. We have 15 minutes to go on everything. We'll have a new caller calling in. Hello, caller.
Okay.
Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123. What's cooking? 708 error code. Hello. Welcome to the show. Okay, I guess the person is shy and don't want to say anything. That's okay. I can listen. So what next on the agenda, Lori? What we can talk about?
Let's end on a positive note, and let's talk about the Democratic Party accomplishments. Let's just end on a positive note. And I'll just name women's rights to vote. That was Woodrow Wilson, Social Security, FDR, minimum wage, FDR, unemployment insurance, FDR. That's, you know, Frank, you know who I'm talking about, right, the president.
Excuse me.
Rural Electrification Act, FDR, FDIC bank account insurance, FDR, GI Bill of Rights, FDR, Securities and Exchange Act, FDR, Marshall Plan, Truman.
Harry Truman, he was responsible for the Marshall Plan, formation of NATO, school lunch program that Republicans hate so much, but yet still give themselves raise and better food. And these legislators are run by Republicans. The Water Quality Act of 1948, that was Truman. John F. Kennedy had the Peace Corps, and he also put first man on the moon. LBJ, he was responsible for the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Then following year, 1965, the Voting Rights Act. He had Medicare and Medicaid, and he was responsible also for the guaranteed Pell Students Loan Program and Operation Head Start. Bill Clinton, Workers' Comp, Motor Voter Act, the Clinton Budget Surplus, the first time in U.S. history. Bill Clinton did it. Family and Medical Leave Act, Bill Clinton did it. The Affordable Care Act, Barack Obama did it. So from 1932 to now, Democrats has been the forefront in America, moving America forward. What has Republicans done since, let's say, Eisenhower? Eisenhower's great with infrastructure, but that was the last great U.S. Republican president. Everybody else after Eisenhower as a Republican really, really was pathetic, except for maybe Nixon. He founded the EPA, which was a good thing. But no, what's what Republicans trying to do with the EPA? You know, so Republicans are not good people. You know, they're not good people, and they've always been on the wrong side of history.
Well,
you know?
Also, David, when you talk about, you know, the negative sides of what the Republicans are trying to do, is, you know, they're trying to, now they talk about Social Security cuts. You know, they are fighting to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That is not even a living wage anymore in our economy, the way things cost. So they are right. They're working against what has already been done for the good of the American people. So they work against everything. You know, they want to even for Medicare, you know, they want to, you know, make cuts on Medicare, things like that. And no, that's going backwards. We want to go forward. You know, we want to strengthen security. We want a good minimum wage. We want universal health care. We want all the things that our country can go forward and thrive and become the greatest country that we can be.
And they
take us backward. That's how I look at it.
Here's another thing that we have to remember. Here's another thing that we should also emphasize and mention. So, yeah, I agree with all those accomplishments, too. So, you know, instead of just looking at the Democratic presidents like, you know, FDR to Biden, we also have to remember the accomplishments of a lot of Democratic senators, Democratic congresspeople, Democratic governors. Senator Amy Klobuchar, she
had an experience, you know, when she was younger, and what started her foray into politics was she had an experience where, you know, after she gave birth, she was forced to leave the hospital 24 hours afterward. And, you know, so what she did, and she stood in front of the state legislature in Minnesota. This was in the early to mid-90s. And she advocated for a bill, even though she wasn't a legislator at the time, but she fought for a bill that would allow for new mothers to stay at the hospital for 48 hours after giving birth. And later, that policy, it was not only was it passed in the Minnesota State Senate and it passed through the Minnesota government, it also became a federal policy that was adopted by President Clinton. He made that a deal. So Amy Klobuchar is one of the leading voices that led to that. And so this is what we have to remember. I said, if so when people ask about the two parties, they're looking at only the presidents or they're only looking at the governors. A lot of these people contribute to a lot of these policies, which is why they get more and more widespread support.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I try again. We'll have have over 9 minutes left. Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show. What's cooking tonight? Okay, I guess the person from Chicago though, on some of them. Madeline calling in. I don't know. I guess the person's shy. I'd rather listen. Madeline, are you there? Yeah, I guess everybody would rather listen on everything.
I didn't even know. I must have missed it, but I didn't even hear Madeline come in to begin with.
No.
Yeah, I saw Madeline numbers here, but, you know, they're not saying anything, so I guess I'd rather listen on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so best of luck to the people in Maui who having those fires. Keep in California, who's having those that hurricane and everything. California never had hurricanes, as far as I know. But you know, I'm sorry to say, you know, globalism and climate change are liberal hopes. So, how do you explain this, conservatives? Your nut jobs, your freak shows. You know, explain the hurricane in California. Seriously, you know, come on, though.
Yeah,
be realistic here.
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen this summer in one, you know, in one way or another, we have all seen that the weather has become very different. I mean, I think extremely different this year. I mean, here in Michigan, we've had a lot of rain, not torrential, but a lot of rain, very, very hot. We've been seeing, you know, like Florida's baking and, you know, the South is, you know, over 100 degree temperatures, you know, every day. Arizona, same thing, 115 degrees. This is not normal. This is climate change. It's upon us. We need, I don't know, is it too late? Does anyone think we're too late? I don't know. We might be. I'm not sure. You know, Mother Nature is the boss, you know, truly.
Yeah. And maybe that's why Elon Musk trying to, you know, make sure they can colonize Mars. So fuck this Earth up. We can have somewhere to live. And that shouldn't be the case, you know? Yeah.
No.
'Cause Earth is all we have, basically. And how long would it take for us to colonize Mars or any other planet for that matter? You know, so
that's
we should take care of what we have now, you know?
Yeah.
And try do what's needed to save Earth and everything. Because, you know, this pollution that's happening in East Palestine, Ohio, with a trail derailment, for example. That's another example. You know, when Trump was in there and Bush before him, they cut the EPA budget in half. You know,
yes,
and
they put
people in there that want to, like, you know, make the EPA a skeletal, you know, organization with inexperienced people and partisan people who don't believe in global warming and climate change, you know? So when things like that happen in East Palestine, is that they don't give a damn. They say, okay, well, there's a bunch of poor people that will die, so whatever, you know? And you know, you give all these tax cuts and incentives to corporations, and tax breaks. They don't pay taxes to begin with, so how can you give them tax breaks? You know, so the priorities of these politicians and these corporations who work hand in hand is like an oligarchy.
that work together against the interests of the people. So people should stop voting Republican. And for those Democrats like Kristen Sinema, who's an independent now, and people like Joe Manchin, who's a real son of a bitch, every chance he got, he pissed on Joe Biden. And I can't understand why Joe Biden don't stand up for that bastard. You know, it's frustrating.
I don't know.
It's frustrating.
It is frustrating.
But anyway, last words. We have 5 minutes left. It's time for a short and brief last words. Eric, go ahead.
So my final words would be that you're right. Another way to get us more votes and higher approval ratings and better support is by emphasizing on the achievements and the accomplishments of many members of the Democratic Party. You talk about FDR, JFK, Jimmy Carter, Lyndon Johnson, you know, Clinton, Obama, Biden, and also Democratic Senators Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Congresspeople, the squad members, Adam Schiff, Eric Swalwell, and our governors, Gretchen Whitmer, you know, Gavin Newsom, Kathy Hochul, Laura Kelly, and J.B. Pritzker. As long as we continue to capitalize and emphasize these accomplishments and people can really see what is being done and the effects of these policies, or even the potential effects of the policies, even if they don't pass, it's still knowing that you have a party that, for the most part, is doing things and taking action to getting better, to bettering people's lives and bettering the security and the stability of the country, and a lot of the other party is not working towards that. That's what the American people need to understand and realize, and that's why we got to get out and vote blue no matter who, and register more people to vote.
Right.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Eric. And Elaine, you have the last word, briefly.
I don't know. I just want to see Donald Trump in an orange jumpsuit. That's my last word for tonight.
Yeah, a majority of us want that. True, true.
Yeah,
all right, thanks everybody for calling in. Elaine in Michigan, Eric in Michigan, Nicola early, Nathan from Orlando, Florida, and the person from Chicago, Illinois, who'd rather listen, and you know, I think the person's shy and everything. And also Madeline in Michigan. We thank everybody for joining us. This has been Kitchen Politics 123 for Monday, August 21st, 2023, Season 5, Episode 26, When and Why Did America Become This Stupid? That was a topic. So until next time, same place, on Block Talk Radio. This is Kitchen Politics 123. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
Good night, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening and for sharing. And have a good evening. We'll see you Sunday. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you. But the reality couldn't be further from the truth, as I discovered on the streets here, asking US locals about the very world their country runs.
Name a country that begins with U.
Yugoslavia?
With U, Utah.
A country that starts with a U.
Utopia.
Who's in the coalition of the willing?
No freaking idea.
Afghanistan, Kuwait, Iraq, Pakistan,
you know.
New Zealand?
New Zealand.
What's the religion of Israel?
Israeli. Islamic.
Catholic, probably. What religion are Buddhist monks?
Buddhist monks.
Who won the Vietnam War?
We did. Wait, were we even in the Vietnam War? Okay, good.
Who's Fidel Castro?
Our finger.
How many sides does a triangle have?
Damn, four.
There's no five. One.
What is the currency used in the United Kingdom?
What's the currency in the United Kingdom?
What is it in the United Kingdom? I don't know.
Possibly American money.
Queen Elizabeth money? That's all I know.
Name a country that begins with U.
A country?
Yeah. What about this one?
What?
The United States of America. In terms of the war on terror, who do you think should be the next country to invade?
Saudi Arabia.
Somebody in the Middle East will make a big glass crater out of the fucking Middle East, for all I care. I'm thinking Italy.
Italy.
Cuba.
Cuba.
Yeah.
Iran.
Iran? Why not?
I think there's a revolution going on pretty soon.
Russia, China, India, and Pakistan, Indonesia, Brazil, Korea.
Korea?
Yeah,
why do you say that?
They're trouble.
They're trouble? Yep, okay. What's trouble about them?
That's your attitude. Canada.
Sri Lanka?
Right
there. I haven't heard of it.
Iran?
Iran? Iran?
Yeah. All right, so put a number one in Iran there? Stop.
Yeah,
North Korea.
North Korea. Why do you think North Korea?
Between France and the United States.
Where do you think the best place to invade Iran would be from? Would it be from the north, or the south, or the east, or the west?
Large like that.
Kofi Annan. Is it drink?
True or false? Coffee is a drink.
Coffee and what?
It sounds like a lava.
Yeah, who is Tony Blair?
I don't even know.
Okay. All right. Any guess?
Any guess?
Tony Blair is an actor.
Linda Blair's brother?
Which countries are in the axis of evil?
I know Germany's one of them. I'm not sure.
Okay. California.
Yep.
New York.
Jerusalem.
Right.
Jerusalem.
Okay. There's more than one.
I think all of them.
Florida. Okay. I'm a little bit mixed up on the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which one is throwing the rocks?
I can't think of the other name of the other one. The fellow with the turban thing, and I call it a diaper head, really.
I believe Mississippi. Who was the fifth man on the moon? Charlie Clark.
Armstrong walked on the moon, but I think it was a Russian. I'm not sure.
Well, I got to tell you, some people don't believe that happened. They believe that was reincarnated in Arizona somewhere.
What is a moss?
Don't have any idea.
You want to guess?
An animal.
I have no intelligent guess. Okay, do you want to make a super guess? How many kidneys does a person have?
One.
What is collateral damage?
Well, they just made a film about it, but that's definitely not what it is. It's probably as something that the movie was about, but not necessarily related to the movie. Do you know what I mean?
How many world wars have there been?
Three.
Which state does KFC come from?
What, the chicken?
I really don't know. Okay, do you know what KFC stands for?
Kentucky Fried Chicken, right?
Star Wars is based on a true story. True or false?
True. What are Hiroshima and Nagasaki famous for?
What is it, Zudo Wrestling?
And how many Eiffel Towers are there in Paris?
I'd say about 10.
What is Al-Qaeda?
Okay, there's a group, suicide group in Israel in Middle East that they do suicide bombs and stuff.
Okay, right, yep.
And the president of it is Yasser Arafat.
Right, yep.
Everybody knows that.
Okay.
Listen, my answer, Al-Qaeda is a wing of the Masonic Order.
Where was the Berlin Wall? What is the main religion of Israel?
Muslim.
The language they speak in Latin America is Latin, true or false?
The what?
Believe me, I don't know the answer to this question, but I'm thinking.
Okay.
Israel? Lord.